You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Yeah, it was interesting talking to Shane Waldron today, and like, it's not like he's going to tell you who their quarterback is going to be next year. Hey, are you good with Geno and Drew? No. Like, what is he going to say? Right? I mean, like, so we didn't really go down that direction, but to me, it is still.
Well, you could be like, what's his name? McAdoo right before the draft and just give away.
Oh, yeah.
Quarterback.
Yeah,
I guess, yeah.
I shouldn't have told you that.
Should have tried to trick him into telling me who this quarterback was going to be. The thing is, you know, I kind of get the sense. As of right now, it's Geno. Assuming Drew Lock shows anything in the next few months and into training camp, preseason, et cetera, they would probably love to give him the job. And then Baker Mayfield is sort of this wild card of, hey, what if, right? What if he gets cut? What if Drew struggles? What if, you know, Geno's legal issues crop back up or whatever? I mean, like, there's a pretty good what if that brings you to Baker Mayfield. And I guess it kind of depends which direction you want to go. Steve Smith, longtime great wide receiver, feisty wide receiver. He's working in the media now. And, you know, he actually is a lot more positive on Drew Lock than some other folks have been.
Drew Lock is a young man coming out of Missouri that you understand exactly what he was. He was a gunslinger. He would try to put the ball in places that he shouldn't. That's a great attribute. That attribute is called confidence, right? It's hard to believe in someone if that individual does not believe in himself. He believes in himself. I believe Drew Lock is a fantastic quarterback. I think he is much better than the draftees because he is more of a finished product.
That's interesting, right? Gunslinging, while not a popular trait for NFL quarterbacks currently, might still be a important trait to have grown up with because of the confidence it takes. Easier to rein somebody back in than to build up their confidence, right? Than to let them make them believe that they're good enough. So, okay, I kind of understand some of that. I'm not sure it's entirely true, but okay, fine. He goes on to say that, you know, that confidence was shattered in Denver.
Now, it has not been gone well in Denver for him for a lot of different reasons. It's not necessarily Drew Lock can't play football, but at the same time, there's a new head coach, a new offense coordinator, new defense coordinator in Denver for those very reasons that Drew Lock was not primarily one of those reasons. He was just part of the problem. Now he gets a new lease on life and a new career to show that maybe it was not him. Maybe it was the regime prior to. So it gives him every opportunity to show what kind of quarterback he was in college and what he can be in the pros today.
That's a good malapropism, by the way. A leash on life.
Let's go. Oh, I didn't hear it.
He said a new leash on life.
I think he like kind of tried to power through, but it just like slipped there a little.
That was pretty good. I like that.
I don't think he meant to say that.
I don't know. Regardless, it's kind of funny. I think what he's trying to say there, if I could read between the lines, is, you know, there's a reason why the coaching staff in Denver got fired. It wasn't all Drew Lock's fault, and maybe some of it is the way they treated Drew Lock. And I think there's some conversation out there that I've heard, you know, some rumblings of why have the Seahawks been so over the top praising Drew Lock over and over again. Well, try to build the guy back up. Right? It doesn't mean he's necessarily as good as they keep saying he is, but if you can get his confidence back up and make him believe that you believe in him, can you at least get the best that he has to offer? And then you can determine if that's enough. Right? I think the argument on Drew Lock goes, maybe he's good enough, maybe not. But the version of him that we saw in Denver was so poisoned by the coaches that were there and the way they treated him and talked about him, et cetera, and probably the way the fan base reacted to him. It's a tough fan base, especially on quarterbacks, that regardless of whether his best is good enough, we haven't seen it.
Uh-huh.
So what can we do as a coaching staff to try to bring the best of this guy out? And then you can make a decision as to whether or not he's good enough, whether you need to go get somebody else. And I think I can believe that script. I don't know whether his best is good enough, and I think that that's a pretty big risk. But, you know, you're not looking to need to be your long-term guy. He may be your short-term guy.
I don't think there's ever been a knock on his arm.
Right.
I think the thing for Pete Carroll is going to be whether he can stop some of those dumb turnovers.
Yeah, can he?
Because that'll get you in Pete Carroll's doghouse.
As it should. It should get you in every coach's doghouse, right? Like, that's the key. Don't turn the ball over and make some of the throws that you've got to make. Now, other people are going the exact opposite way. And you know, Mike Florio, if Steve Smith is being optimistic, not surprisingly, Mike Florio and to a lesser extent Albert Breer, who I'll play afterwards, are maybe a little bit more on the pessimistic slash skeptical slash conspiracy theory side of the world. So here's Mike Florio and what he believes the Seahawks are up to.
I just have a feeling Pete's up to something here. I have a feeling that Pete's trying to bluff the Browns. And I have a feeling that there is kind of a long con that's going on here where the Seahawks are acting like they don't want Baker Mayfield, even though maybe they do. But they know the Browns are desperate. The Browns have no other option.
Yeah.
So they are digging in with the guys they have. And part of that is touting Drew Locke in the hopes of getting, at the end of the day, Baker Mayfield for nothing.
This may surprise you, but I'm wired a little bit more like Mike Florio.
It's a big surprise.
I don't want to shock anybody here today.
And it's not like there's a whole lot of leverage for anybody here. I mean, like it's or a big market for Baker either, right? They're not competing against too many teams if they really did want Baker quietly.
Well, I think that's why there's a thought that maybe they're holding their cards close to the vest because they might be the only team that really is going to consider him. So they can't,
right.
They don't want the Browns to know that.
Nor should they. Hey, no, we love Drew. We love Geno.
Yeah. We're happy with him.
I mean, look, if you want to give us Baker, I mean, we can have the conversation, but we don't need him. Right. I mean, this is like negotiating 101, right? Like, hey, you know, you're looking to buy a car. Do you like this car? Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, but
there's a lot of other cars. Like, this is a Honda Civic. I also like a Toyota Corolla.
Sure.
And right?
If you're the Browns,
I kind of like a Kia Forte. Like, you know, there's a lot of competitors in this field. Like, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, and if you're the Browns, you're like, okay, Pete, you have two Dodge Neons. Like, wouldn't you like
maybe
to try something?
But
like,
if you can convince
everybody.
We know
you're lying to us.
You can convince them that your Dodge Neon is a Honda Accord, then maybe you'll be okay, right? I mean, I think what the Seahawks are trying to avoid is walking into the lot and being like, hey, I need a car today. What do you got?
Right.
Do you have a car? I need one. Do you have an Accord? Do you have a Civic? I'll take a CRV. What do you got? I need a car.
I need a RAV4. I don't need the Carfax. No.
Right?
No.
Yeah, I need a car. Do you see the car that I just drove in on, this jalopy? It doesn't work. I need a car.
I don't know how this fits into the car analogy, but Albert Breer also made he was on Rich Eisen's show. He also said in that he thinks we would all look a lot differently at Baker Mayfield if he was a second or third round pick as opposed to a first overall.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
What his talent level is.
I think that's probably true.
I've heard you say it a few times, like, yeah, number one.
He was.
Maybe he's a bit overrated.
Most guys who go 1-1, you're going to give them at least a second chance, especially after they go to a dump like Cleveland and all the problems that they've had there. And dealt with the shoulder injury that he had last year that he played through. Yeah, I think there's a reason to give him a shot. You mentioned Breer. Here's a little bit more from Bert.
I honestly think Seattle would look at it. Now, you know, I don't think that they wanted to fork over draft capital for him and pay him $18 million. But under the right circumstance, I think Pete Carroll wants to create a quarterback competition there. And you look at their draft, and they didn't come away with one, you know. And so I think Seattle's a place where if you look at how they got Russell Wilson all those years ago, right? Like, it's easy for all of us to sit here and say, well, you know, they took a big swing on a third round pick and they nailed that, you know? But like, the truth is, and I think you and I have talked about this before, they got to Russell Wilson by continually throwing darts.
Yeah, they threw dots all over, right? One was with Charlie Whitehurst and Matt Flynn and Tavares Jackson, right? Eventually Russell was one of them. But they were, you know, they were throwing them all over.
Throwing dots.
Sorry, there's something about the word darts. I just you have to say with a Boston accent. Like, just go out and play some dots. I told you about the softball league I was in with my dad. We go back to the West Street Grill at the end of all of them. And these guys are like, Salky, you play dots? We play dots every Tuesday. I'm like, all right. I don't really know. Like, you just throw them at a board? Like, yeah, it's a whole dot league. Oh, really? The league of dots.
So. I want to sit around in a Boston pub and just hear that accent and soak it in.
Yeah, I mean, you can't miss it if you're there.
I want to do it.
You've never been?
I've never been to Boston. For some reason, it's not happened. I know.
Big scooter town.
Well, I believe it to be in all that weather. I've been in New York more times, so I think I should probably skip New York next time and do Boston.
I think you're pretty much fine just hanging out in New York.
Okay.
All right, coming up next, tell you everything you need to know, a little bit from Brock, and we'll do so. Oh, we have a good rank. We got to work early on ranking today. Maura hates it. But you'll love it. It's all coming up in the next 50 minutes. Mike Salk Show on Seattle Sports on 710.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Hey, we got some day baseball today. Mariners play the Phillies, 12:40 start. First pitch, Logan Gilbert on the hill at T-Mobile Park. A rubber match for this series. Nice to see the Mariners take one. Would be great. Kind of need it. Came up with a win last night, as I was saying. It was very Wee Willie Keeler-esque. They hit it where they ain't. That was what he once said, and the Mariners did it. Lethal combination of just bloops and bunts and seeing-eye singles, swinging bunts, and waiting for the Phillies to just allow their terrible defense to show up, which is exactly what happened. It certainly wasn't pretty, but it did work. They finished with 11 hits. 10 of them were singles, only one double amongst them. So it was just that kind of a night. Robbie Ray, though, pretty darn good, especially for the first four innings where he was perfect.
The 2-2. Swing and a miss and a slider for strike three. 12 in a row set down by Robbie Ray, and that is strikeout number 7. Holy smokes, what a performance.
Yeah, he was really great through four. Kind of got in some trouble in the fifth and then didn't make it out of the sixth. So a very good, not quite great night. Really good to see the strikeout numbers back for Robbie Ray. I think that's something we've all been waiting for, and I thought that was great to see. Mariners win 5-4. By the way, if you're looking for more information on Wee Willie Keeler, because I was kind of went down that rabbit hole this morning, the guy hit 341 for his career. He had a total of 33 home runs in 19 seasons. Different era, not as much power. But if you look at him, I think he was 5'4", and he chokes up so high on the bat, it's almost in the middle of the bat when he's swinging. Like, Google some, do a quick Google image search of Wee Willie Keeler, and you'll laugh at how high he's choked up on the bat. Very different from the whole launch angle revolution of today. Hey, not to put a sour note on this whole thing, because it was nice to see the win last night, but Ryan Divish on yesterday with Jake and Stacy with a very unfortunate injury report.
You know, Mitch Haniger, it's possible that he's out 12 weeks total. When I talked to him, it was framed bad enough that it's bone bruise on the side, on the high level. You just don't get back from that. And we've seen how much torque that Mitch puts on his body when he swings and how hard he goes. I just don't know how long that's going to take to get him back. You know, he's still in a walking boot. Typical for a grade two, between a grade two and a grade three sprain, is 12 weeks. And to play at maximum levels, that could be that long. I mean, 12 weeks without Mitch Haniger is a long time.
Yeah, 12 weeks, you're talking about essentially 3 months of half a season being without arguably your best hitter. And again, that veteran presence that I think they really miss in their lineup right now.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, schedule release day in the NFL is tomorrow, but we'll jump the gun a little bit, mostly because we got our days mixed up, and this is kind of what I have for need to know. But, hey, Russ and the Broncos, we know they're coming. Rumor has it, Adele, that it could be week one, Monday Night Football. I think that would be crazy. Do you want that, though? Don't you kind of want Russ to come later? You don't want it week one.
No.
Although, weird things happen in week one.
Yeah, I want it week one.
You want it right off the bat?
Especially if we aren't great and it's like 2-8 versus 8-1 Broncos. Like, I want it week one.
Yeah, that's true. All right, I can buy some of that. Maybe that is a good reason to have it be week one. We know Bobby's returning with the Rams. We know they'll be in Munich, of course, to play the Bucks in November. Their bye week will be the next week, which is the one before Thanksgiving. But because of that, I wonder if they may end up with a Thanksgiving game, right? Because that would be the following Thursday. We know there are three Christmas Day games, so a possibility they could have one of those. And, of course, they will travel 29,446 miles, to be precise. That is a lot, and obviously the most in the league, mostly because of the game in Munich.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, we can go into a little bit more detail on this, but it's kind of a weird quirk of the lottery, the NHL draft lottery. Despite finishing with the third worst record in the league, the Kraken actually had the best odds of landing the number 4 pick, and that's what they ended up with. Montreal was the worst team in the league. They ended up drafting first. Then the Devils. Arizona gets pushed back to number 3, and so the Kraken end up 4th. There's no real generational talents available this year. It's not like there's an Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby type player. So not getting the number 1 overall pick isn't like the worst disaster this year. And Ron Francis thinks there'll still be some pretty good players available at number 4.
Yeah, no, we feel pretty comfortable that we can get guys in the probably top 5-6 that could step in the next couple of years. So, we feel there's a couple players that step into this year's lineup probably in the NHL, whether whether they get to us at four and we're able to pick them or not remains to be seen. But there are talented players in this draft.
All right, so let's say there's three types of players you could end up picking there. One would be the generational talents, right? The McDavids, the Matthews, the Crosbys. Those aren't available this year. Two are the kinds of players that can step into your lineup almost right away. And that's what they got last year, right? And Matty Beniers is a guy who, within a year from being drafted, was coming to the NHL and contributing arguably the best player on his team within, like, a game. And then the third is what he's saying is most likely available for them at the four spot. Really good players who should come up within a couple of years and be ready to have good NHL careers. So kind of what you're looking at for the fourth spot in the draft. By the way, next year, there is one generational player available. So see whether or not it works out that way. And if they do have another bad season, maybe that's a positive that comes out of it. A couple of blowouts in the NBA last night. Miami crushes Philly by 35. Phoenix over Dallas by 30. NHL action, Hurricanes, Blues, Leafs, Kings all win. They all lead 3-2. So we had a question earlier that came in. Thank you. That's everything you need to know. About how it is how the Kraken were most likely to get the number four spot despite finishing with the third best record. So
I still don't understand the points thing here.
Yeah, well, I mean, just the points sort of become irrelevant. You rank the teams in terms of how many points, and the Kraken had the third least points in the league. So they had the third best odds of the number one overall pick, but their best odds were for the fourth pick, which is a little weird. It's because the first two teams can't slide back beyond third.
Uh-huh.
So in this case, when the Coyotes didn't get the two pick, I think they were the second worst team, they could only slide back to three. Mm. And once that happens, right, once they got jumped by, I think it's New Jersey, they slide back to three and the Kraken get pushed to number four.
Like Canadian?
Does that make sense? Yeah. Canadians were one. They had the best odds and they won it.
Yeah.
The Devils leapfrogged because they were actually fourth. They got lucky and drew the number two pick. Well, because of that, the Coyotes could only slide back to three, yeah, and they pushed the Kraken down to four. Yeah. So that's why the plurality of, like, their best odds, it wasn't more than 50%, but their best odds were the four pick. It's sort of weird.
Because of the lottery.
Yeah, and they kind of get screwed because of it, unfortunately, right? They would have done better without a lottery than they did with one.
Do you like the lottery?
I don't think it does. I mean, it's sort of fun and exciting. I don't think it really does what they hope it's going to.
From tanking.
No, I mean, because they're still gunning for the most number of ping pong balls. So I don't think it works the way they hope it does, but it's fine. You know, I do understand sort of the idea of sort of a staggered draft where the teams that just miss the playoffs end up with higher picks than teams that tank. Right, it's not necessarily competitive balance, but it's rewarding teams trying to win,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
and coming really close. And I can understand some of that. You give them, and especially in the NBA, I think it would be great if a team just misses the playoffs, give them a chance at a generational talent rather than some god awful organization that year after year finishes at the bottom. The NBA, I think, would be the best team to do something, or the best league to do something like that. Hey, you know who gets the team? Someone in perpetual mediocrity. Let them keep working hard. Oh, I'm sorry you didn't quite make the playoffs, but guess what? We have our booby prize for you, and it's, you know, the next LeBron James. Mm-hmm. So I think there is something to that. All right. Coming up, we'll talk to Brock. And then, as I said, somebody said I was a little too gleeful when I said that Maura hated our idea for rank today. Plus, she says she's not going to do that anymore because she thinks it'll help. It's like giving it up for Lens.
I was giving it up, and the Mariners won last night.
Her sacrifice.
So.
She's giving it up for Lens.
How are you doing with your sacrifice?
Well, I already ate a Pop-Tart today. But that's not kind of your fault.
You immediately said you weren't going to do it yesterday.
No.
So did you come up with something else to sacrifice? But
hold on. The reason I ate another Pop-Tart is because you went and bought the banana ones, and they're so good, I have to keep eating them, like, until the box is gone.
Well, one could argue you ate a Pop-Tart yesterday, they won. You
right.
Ate a Pop-Tart today?
A banana Pop-Tart, so maybe that's the key. More, keep buying
you
those
have to
banana.
Finish the box.
Keep buying those banana Pop-Tarts. Yeah. We'll be good to go. All right, we'll be right back. Mike Salk, Jones, Seattle Sports on 710.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Well, good morning, Brock.
Well, good morning, Mikey. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's Mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom.
Oh, happy birthday.
Jane, big birthday for her.
How is
it's not
Jean?
Actually particularly big. It's just a birthday. She's doing great. Yeah.
Doing good?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. She opened our cards last night, though, which I thought was odd. She's like, oh, thanks for the card. I'm like, your birthday's tomorrow. She's like, I know, but I really wanted to open the card. Like, what are you, seven? What are you talking about? You open the card ahead of time? You wait until your birthday.
You like Church, huh? Jason Churchill?
Oh, yes.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, and he did, and he's got some pretty good insights on this team. I mean, you know, I think he like me, has been a little concerned about Robbie Ray, and really good to see last night. Even though the long-term results in terms of how deep into the game he went weren't there, just, you know, 10 strikeouts and 5 2/3 is a huge difference.
Yes, swings and misses. Being able to strike people out, not having to put everything in play. And, yep, and obviously with all those strikeouts, pitch count kind of got up there, so he didn't get as extended as maybe you wanted. But, ooh, they needed that one. And they need it today. They need to go finish and win this series and because this road trip is no joke.
And then after that, they have another one. Do you realize they have three straight East Coast road trips?
Whew,
right? They did the one from Tampa, Miami, and Houston. Home for two series. Then they're going to go back on the road. I think they go, it's either New Toronto, York. New York, or New York, Toronto.
New York, Toronto.
And then Boston.
Yep.
Right? And then they come home. And then they go back to, like, Baltimore and somewhere. Like, it's crazy. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Well, there was a year the Seahawks had that, I believe, had a bunch of East Coast trips. You remember that? And I think the schedule comes out tomorrow.
Yes,
correct?
It is tomorrow. And the Seahawks are going to travel like 34,000 miles.
More than anybody
something.
Else. Yes.
Well, they're going to Munich. That's part of it.
Yeah, that plays a little role.
Hey, so I got a question for you.
I didn't get Tom Brady's deal.
I was going to say, I wasn't. Did you get the deal? I was just curious if you'd talk to your new teammate.
Right. Yeah. Going to be a fun little orientation and hazing, rookie hazing for
him
when he joins next year or that is.
When that happens and Tom Brady, you know, the story comes out that he's signing for like $30 million a year, whatever it is.
Right.
What are there? Is there like a text thread amongst the other color commentators at Fox?
Yeah.
Like, do you and Joel Klatt and Troy, does everybody get on a little text thread like, really?
Well, what does that
say? They got 30 million?
What does that say to Troy in particular, right? Because Troy wanted to make more than Tony Romo. And they were like, no, you're not going to make – I mean, it's – no, we'll take care of you, but it's ridiculous.
Says do a little homework before the games instead of winging it.
And then all of a sudden, we're going to pay him double. We'll pay him double, Tony Romo. So they actually had the money to pay Troy Aikman if they wanted to. But it was more of, I think, just Troy being difficult. And after all of these years and all the relationship and everything else that Fox had with Troy that took care of him, treated him incredibly well, like this is a fair and reasonable number.
But does anyone know whether or not Brady's even good at this?
Well, they thought Joe Montana was going to be really good.
Right. And he was terrible, right?
And they thought Bill Walsh was going to be really good. And then that Jason, well, I don't know if they thought Jason Witten would be really good.
But they gave him the Monday night job.
Sure did. Like,
don't you have to at least, before you commit.
Did.
So what if he bombs? What if he's terrible? What if it's a Jason Witten situation and after a year they're like, we just can't even work with this.
Right.
They're going to pay out the rest of a $370 million deal?
Doesn't make sense. It,
there's got to be an out.
We've got, yes. I think we learned that in Geno Smith's contract. We always got to be careful about what these original numbers are, right?
Good point.
The great John Clayton always taught us that. Just be very, very guarded about whatever you read first. The devil is going to be in the details. What if Tom Brady, after a year, is like, you know what?
Yeah, I'm good.
There's a reason Peyton doesn't do it, okay? Because Peyton wants his weekends. Peyton wants to ski. Peyton's son plays baseball and basketball, and his daughter plays tennis and basketball and soccer. And, you know, he's a super active dad and wants to be around for their activities on top of all the other stuff that he does, both business and media. I can't do 20 straight weekends.
Yeah.
You know what
I'm
saying?
It's a lot of work.
Or Thursdays or Monday. I mean, come on. Sundays and Thanksgiving and every holiday now. Like, and Tom's got kids. I thought that was part of why he retired, like, you know, for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, for six weeks or 40 days.
And then he was around the kids.
That's right.
We're all
and
good.
He's like, yeah, you know, I'll go back to work.
Not only will I go back to work, I'm going to commit to 10 years at Fox as soon as I'm done.
Correct.
The whole thing is kind of bizarre.
Remarkable.
Hey, so I'm talking to Shane Waldron coming up here in about 10 minutes.
What?
Yeah, talking to my guy.
Say what?
That's right. Talking to Shane Waldron coming up in 10 minutes. What, you know, I've asked you a lot of questions about what this offense should look like this year, but I'll ask you again, you know, kind of how do you see it looking different, not just from the way it used to, but maybe with a different type of quarterback, not having, you know, a running quarterback. How do you see the offense looking different?
I see, honestly, like a Jared Goff Rams-led offense. And people are like, oh, well, Jared Goff took them to the Super Bowl with his skill set. They went to the Super Bowl, and I believe Shane was on that staff, correct? Obviously, New England had their way with them and everything else, and the Rams decided there was a ceiling to Jared Goff, and we got to go spend and trade and do what we got to do to get Matthew Stafford, and they win a Super Bowl. So that, quite honestly, is more of what I envision is. And I had the Rams that year, I think three times, the one season, and I didn't get paid $37 million. And I didn't even get paid $3 million. I didn't even get paid. Well, I'll keep moving that decimal on down the line. But anyway, I had the Rams like three times. And I just vividly remember talking to Sean McVay about this. Like, man, you make it easier on that O-line. Like, there's an illusion of complexity. It looks like you guys are doing so much and jet sweeps and formations and all of this stuff. But you have really core principles. Whoa. Excuse me.
All right. That's why you don't get the 30 mil right there.
Whoa, whoa. That's why.
Brady won't have that problem. Brady's going to have never have
Holy
phlegm.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, he's
phlegm-free.
Ever.
Yeah. So you have these core principles, and you do make it easy on the line because it's outside run and screen and play action and movement off of it. And it is. It's that illusion. That's what I would ask him. Is illusion of complexity still a real thing? Is that still something that's
illusion
a part
of complexity?
Yep. So all it looks super complex to fans.
Justin, write that down. More, write that down. We have to ask Shane about the illusion of complexity.
Is that real? What is life like with two rookie offensive tackles? I mean, how much does that change your game? But most importantly, this is what I really want to hear. What is it like to actually have an off season?
Yeah. Wait, hold. Did you just like take over my interview? You just took over the interview. I asked you how the offense would look different.
Do you want me to keep
and now
going?
You're just asking questions of Shane Waldron.
I can keep going. Well, can I stick around for it?
No, absolutely not.
What?
What do you mean? Can you stick around for it? I wake up at 4 a.m. My privilege for that is that I get to talk to Shane Waldron here in a few minutes.
Brock, I'll allow it if you want to stay for it.
Get out of here. Just like Tom Brady, you're going to have to put in the work if you want to come talk to Shane Waldron.
Fine. All right, we got next?
What? Yes, it's next.
What?
Which is why I got to go.
So you go Churchill to meet a Waldron?
Yeah.
And you call that work?
And Brock, you know who else is coming on today?
No.
Paul Silvey.
Oh, goodness gracious.
That's right. New home of the Seahawks over there, King
it's
5.
Pretty cool. And the schedule tomorrow comes out. Yeah. And we got a lot to talk about leading up to that. And, you know who else you get to talk to today?
You?
Me.
And Howdy.
Uh-huh.
I know. Yeah, we'll do the podcast right after the show. All right. See you, buddy. Thank you.
See ya.
All right, every day, 7:45 and 9:30 with the great Brock Huard. And he was right. That's exactly what Waldron ended up talking about, right? Was the illusion of complexity. And I think I understand now kind of what it means, right? If I understand him properly, what he's saying is a couple of things. One, how do we make the other team believe, how do we confuse the other team while not getting confused ourselves? How do we make something look complex so that the other team is trying to figure out what we're doing, but simple enough that we can explain it to our own guys without them getting confused and doing the wrong thing?
Just disguises.
Yeah, that's right. It's a way of talking about disguise. And I've told the story, I don't know how many times, but I love it. It's one of the most interesting things I've ever heard. And this is with Bill Belichick, who I used to interview every week after the game. The next day, for my year that I was at WEEI in Boston, we had an interview. We were the station that interviewed Bill Belichick. Well, as you can imagine, it was usually terrible, right? I mean, Belichick doesn't want to do it. God forbid they lose, or he was on the phone, and he'd spend the whole time just like slopping at the mic, and then he'd give you a one-word answer on anything, and he didn't want to talk about his own team. But if you could get Bill talking about history of the game, he was great. So generally, I just start asking him about the Giants and Lawrence Taylor and Carl Banks and all that stuff, and he was always fun. Talking about that, but he got into this conversation one day about the old Cowboys defense and how they were by far the best defense in the league and by far the most complex. And he said the reason was then, guys, there was no free agency. So when you started playing for the Cowboys and you were good, you might play there for 15 years as their inside linebacker, whatever the case may be. And so every year they added to the complexity of the defense and built on what they had already done until it got harder and more complicated, right? Because the guys knew it all cold.
Yeah.
They'd been running it forever, and Landry was there forever, right? So they built this really complicated defense. He said the challenge of being a defensive coach in, at this time was what, 2013, is the exact opposite. How do you simplify everything so that you can plug and play whichever players are healthy, whichever players are available to you, and whichever players you've drafted or brought in free agency? You have to make it simple enough that with all the limited practice time, they can figure it out right away and not get confused. And yet you're still trying to make it complex because you know just how much better a complex defense or maybe an offense can function if everybody could understand it. And that's one of those friction points, one of those balancing points for a coach trying to figure out how complex you can make something.
The illusion of complexity would be a good band name too.
Yes.
or maybe my Banana Famine album. That's going to be the album.
Banana Famine.
Yeah.
Illusion of Complexity.
Illusion of Complexity.
The new hit single from Banana Famine.
And it's all King Mike and Gross Michelle references in every single song.
Yeah, my mom asked me when the Gross Michelle were coming, the bananas. I was like, Mom, it could be weeks, maybe months. We don't even know if they're in season. I mean, one thing it says when I ordered on that website is, heads up, it will ship, you know, however many weeks after we get them in season. So that could be, I don't know what the Gross Michelle season is. I think bananas you can grow year round, but what if the season is like, you know, February?
So you sent,
we might not be getting,
how much money?
$80.
You spent $80 to somebody in Miami for bananas.
This special sounds bananas. Like, I might have lit $80 bananas on fire.
This sounds like you could be now on some kind of list and someone's going to show up at your door and be like, what did you order from Miami in this
box?
So?
Yeah. It's like a tremendous amount of cocaine. Is that a problem?
Yeah, that came from this random country.
That was the other question bananas. I was asked is, where do these Gross Michelle bananas come from? I don't know. I just know that, like, hopefully there'll be some information that comes with it so that I can read a little bit more about where they got it. But maybe they're keeping it a secret because they don't want people
sketchy
to get a hold of their Gross Michelle plants.
You and your black market bananas.
That's me.
Black market bananas. That's my next album.
That's another good album. Yeah. The latest single from Banana Famine. All right. We have a Mariners lineup. Would you like to know what the Mariners lineup looks like?
Who's leading off?
Or sounds like, anyway. Who's leading off? Frazier.
Okay.
Adam Frazier.
Sort of.
Not Todd. Adam Frazier. Ty France at first. Julio in center field. Batting third. Crawford. Now he's a cleanup hitter.
JP's hitting
Crawford.
Four.
Yeah. JP Crawford hitting fourth. Suarez fifth. Torrens is DHing today. And then Winker Moore in right field with the lefty on the mound. And Cal Raleigh is catching.
So no Kelnick.
No, geez, what is going on with Jesse Winker, by the way? Like, I talk about a guy you're waiting to turn it around. He's just not hitting the ball hard at all. Yeah. He's rolling over and weak ground balls and
ground balls,
you know, chintzy pop-ups and just like, what is going on with Jesse Winker, a guy who's had really good success for the last few years? He looks lost, and he's looked lost now for a couple of weeks. I'd really like to see him kind of get it together, and I know this argument about, you know, hey, he's new in town and he's trying to, fine, but at some point, like, he's gone from batting second and third to now batting seventh in a lineup that also includes, like, Cal Raleigh, who's hitting 0-12. So, like, let's let Jesse Winker kind of get it together here, okay?
Yeah, I was getting in the conversation last night about Cal Raleigh. We'll have to save that for tomorrow.
What's that?
Just trying to figure out the what do you do and, like, how much say does a starting pitcher have in who's catching him?
He's a pretty good defensive catcher, but I mean, you've got to be able to bring something to the plate. He's bringing no power, no ability to get on base from either side of the plate. And I know switch hitting catchers take a while, right? Like, that's always been the thing.
But you can have a competitive at bat.
Like, if you can wait him out, there's the chance that you get a Jason Varitek or a Jorge Posada, a couple of switch hitting catchers. The value there is enormous. But they've got to first work on their catching and on their defense, right? Then they've got to figure out both sides of the plate. The learning curve is really steep, and what you're seeing from him at the major league level right now is just not major league quality. I mean, just he looks like an automatic out the moment he comes up. He'll probably go 3-for-4 with a home run today.
Good.
So there you go. All right, let's do some ranking.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
All right, Justin, what led to our ranking today? What was the story behind this?
Today's a big day, Salk, if you haven't heard.
My mom's birthday. Yes. Happy birthday, Jane Salk.
Happy birthday to Jane Salk. Well, there's a lot of things that happen on this day in history, and a lot of things that we need to celebrate on this day in history.
All right, let's go through it.
Number one is, this fits perfectly with your banana Pop-Tarts. Today is Eat What You Want Day, Salk.
No,
you can eat.
Good, I've already eaten a banana Pop-Tart.
Hey, you celebrated. Perfect. You celebrated the right way.
Doing what I can.
Today is also the anniversary of my favorite of all time. National Parks. Glacier National Park was formed on this
Great
day.
Great National Park.
1910.
Been there. Beautiful.
And today.
Yes.
Is Twilight Zone Day.
Why?
Don't know. Today's Twilight Zone Day. That's all you need to know.
This is the day they picked.
Yep.
It's an all-time great recognizable theme. So this theme came out in the 60s. Twilight Zone is from like 1961 through 65 or something like that.
Or yeah, early 60s.
And that theme to this day is instantly recognizable to, I would think, everybody, even the kids, right?
Yeah, it inspired another rank that I think we should do another day.
Which is creepy themes.
Creepy themes.
Yeah. We could have some fun with that one at some point.
There are a lot.
All right, well, instead for today, what we have is zones ranked.
Zones
ranked. Now,
I can't wait.
There's the
so excited.
There's the...
That's unbelievable.
The negative side of this, zones that don't come anywhere close. Two bad zones, loading zones. Always like, oh, I think there's a space. Ah,
loading zone. It's a three-minute loading zone.
Ugh, loading zone.
Unless some people who just drive right by them and you realize, you look down and you're like, it's Sunday.
That's true. Or like, here. Oh, it's only a loading zone till 6 and it's 5:58. Hey. Those are good. That's true. So loading zone could go either way. And then the worst zone, probably the friend zone.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be there.
Terrible zone.
Right?
Although disarming. It's kind of nice. You don't have to keep it.
I guess.
The pressure's off.
If you could find your way out of the friend zone, it's probably very exciting.
It's like useful it's for the person who's friend zoning you.
Never tried.
That's a good point. Some other zones that didn't quite make the list. The comfort zone. The demilitarized zone. The DMZ. Time to rocket from the Delta to the DMZ. You know how many times I memorized that whole spiel from Good Morning Vietnam, Robin Williams.
I've heard you do it. What about the zone of death?
Yes.
That on there?
The no-fly zone. It's a good zone.
Yeah.
The ozone. Sorry, Maura.
Didn't make the list?
No, didn't quite make it. Neither did Arizona.
No. Oh. Good one.
Where's the kill in the clap for
you.
That one?
I'm trying to do the opposite here.
The end zone, zoning out, which is what Maura usually does during ranked. Time zones. Let's see. The zone blitz. Drop zone. Not necessarily the Wesley Snipes movie, but, you know, when you're parachuting, what it was named for. So there's, you know, a lot of zones. Here's the top five. Number five, the strike zone. Mysterious, apparently, to modern major league umpires, but the strike zone is, you know, it's what the game of baseball is based on. It's what the whole control the zone thing means, right?
Good call. I like starting good here, Maura. Top five zone, I like the number five.
Are you good with that one? Strike zone?
Yeah.
All right, number Love four, it. We already played the theme from the Twilight
Love
Zone.
Love it.
But how about this Twilight Zone? When the bullet hits the bone. You don't know The Twilight Zone by Golden Earring?
No.
All right. Well, they also sang Radar Love. You know that?
You guys were telling me that I would. I'll have to listen after
this. This is a thing that we call Radar Love. Yeah.
Sorry, everyone.
Radar Love.
Radar Love. It's 10:30 and I'm shifting gear. Yeah. Anyway.
Golden Earring. Unnecessarily long songs. Most of them are too long. It's good, though.
Is there food on this list? Because we're getting a good nomination right now.
What's that?
Do you have
Zone
food on
Diet?
This list? Oh, no, Calzone.
Take the L's Tuesday. We'll have to remember that.
Yeah. And the Zone Diet. I probably could have been on here as well.
No, that's low carb.
Number three is a zone defense. Now, maybe like the 2-3 zone probably would have been higher before Mike Hopkins came, brought it to the UW, and they went in the tank. I used to be more of a fan of the 2-3 zone, maybe even the 1-3-1 trap zone. So I like a good zone defense.
I'll allow that.
Used to sometimes run the 3-2 zone at times in high school. Yeah. All right, so that's number three, the zone D. Number two is the red zone. Now, you could choose whether you mean the actual area on the field or NFL red zone,
the channel.
And I think it's probably the latter.
Both good.
Now, you guys have only, if you've watched Scott Hansen do it through that one, have you ever watched the
it's
other
amazing.
One?
No.
Because they do the exact same thing on DirecTV with Andrew Siciliano.
Never had DirecTV?
He also does it. Yeah, he has a completely different Red Zone channel, but it's all like the same idea. But because DirecTV has all the games, he'll tell you, like, that game's airing on Channel 842. So they can do a different one.
Okay.
He does it really well, too. He just doesn't get as much credit. Very hard.
Still no Zone of Death. Expected that.
425 says, I thought I knew Radar Love, but then Salk started singing it. Now I'm not so sure.
It's possible. You're maybe confusing it with Jungle Love. It's driving you mad and making you crazy. All right, number one. And I think this should be fairly obvious. I would hope that we got dozens, if not hundreds, of texts on it. The number one zone.
It's the danger zone.
Great call.
Yeah.
You look like you just went somewhere, so.
I'm zoning out.
Another Kelnick laugh.
Sorry, no, I'm just in the zone. Just in the zone right now, Maura.
Maura sacrificed hating ranked right. for the Mariners, so he's a fan right now.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I'm proud.
You seem proud. All right, we got to get out of here. Jake and Stacey are up next. Jerry DePoto tomorrow morning at 8:30. We'll catch you at 6. Goodbye.